אז השאלה, אני אחזור עליה, לגבי שימוש בתיוג, בעיקר מול צלילים. האם ככה מה שעלה היום בתרגול זה ככה לשמוע צליל, למשל של ציפורים, ולהשתמש בתיוג על מנת לתייג את ההשתנות, חזק, חלש, האם זו נשמעת לי דרך טובה לעשות את זה, או האם יש הצעות אחרות? זו יכולה להיות דרך לעשות את זה, כן, כאילו להשתמש בתיוג על מנת להיות במגע עם השינויים, כן. בדרך כלל אנחנו נציע שהתיוג פשוט יהיה של הניצ'ה, של השתנות, אבל זה גם מאוד אישי, כן. אז אם זה עוזר, אם זה ממקד, להיות עם החזק יותר, כאילו לראות, להתמקד במה השינוי, ולא רק בזה שזה משתנה, אז תנסה ותראה, כן? אם זה מרגיש יותר מיטיב, תעשה את זה ככה. הדבר שמעניין אותנו תמיד זה ככה לראות איך זה מחבר אותי להשתנות, והאם זה מביא איזושהי חוויה של הרפיית האחזות, שצריך לעשות את זה כמה זמן כדי לראות, כן? לפעמים זה מאוד ברור ומיידי, לפעמים צריך להתמיד קצת עם התרגול כדי לחוות את ההרפיה הזאת. זה עונה לך? כן, זאת אומרת, יותר, כאילו, משהו ש, מה שאני התכוונתי בהנחיות זה, אני שומעת את הצליל ואני אל מולו אומרת הניצ'ה, וזה באמת מכוונן את התודעה לראות את ההשתנות גם במקומות שהיא לא מזהה אותם באופן ברור. תודה.
Can I just check you can hear them? No, yes, already good, or up? Is it up a bit more? And
yeah.
Are you getting any? Well, I will repeat the question, but I'm just checking that people can't hear me yet. Yeah. Still not? No? Do you want to? Okay. So we have a problem, so I don't know. Do you think you know the solution to the problem? Okay, so
change to this one while they're working.
Yeah, but I think we're very close.
Okay, yeah, thanks. Is that a bit too loud? It's how's that seem? Yeah, good with that. So the question, I just put it really short, like, what should we do when we're practicing with pleasant Vedanas? So the other Vedanas seem kind of clear, like a sense of what we're doing. So we said yesterday, we could summarize, let's just do two kinds of practice with Vedanas. So one is we're going to respond to our usual negativity bias, which is that we tend to notice the unpleasant Vedanas a lot. We might notice the really exceptional pleasant Vedanas some of the time. Most of them we're not really tuned into. And then we overlook the ones that didn't really get a clear pleasant or unpleasant Vedana. So one way of viewing the practice is, what am I paying attention to? Oh, it's unpleasant. What else is here? What else is here that I could tune into? Right? So in that way, the pleasant Vedana is something that I can notice here that's actually quite nice. You know, and we said that when we start paying attention to some things which appear not actually pleasant, oh, they actually turn out to be quite pleasant. That I can hear, you know, that's actually quite pleasant, you know. And then we actually start to see this second kind of practice, which is we're going to change our relationship to something. And we can use that same example, right? So what normally happens when we sense something that's pleasant, we want to get more of it. You know, if I don't notice so much, you know, something that I'm sensitive to, something that I'm receiving, something I'm consuming or whatever, I might start, instead of enjoying that, I'm actually planning for how I can have more of it in my life in some future moment. And I've left the present moment where all of that appreciation and enjoyment and nourishment of that pleasant Vedana is available to me, and I'm actually placing the heart and mind in a distracted mode, less pleasant mode, giving myself an unpleasant Vedana of like planning for some future thing and not really enjoying the pleasant that's here. Okay? So what we can see from that first example, if we take something and it's pleasant, I'm happy that I can hear. It's pleasant that I can hear. It would be less pleasant if my ears felt blocked or my hearing felt that it didn't show up. You know, that would be an unpleasant experience for me. And so I'm having the pleasant experience, and what am I doing is I'm holding it in appreciation. Yeah? So that's a really skillful thing to do to pleasant things. Appreciate them. So if I'm having a tasty meal, it's not like, can I get more, pile a bigger plate. If I'm hearing a nice sound, it's not like, oh, I wish this thing would stay here forever. But actually, this is nice, that I'm receiving this. And that kind of gratitude, appreciation is a really nice thing to do. So those are kind of two things that we can do with pleasant Vedanas. So number one, have some. Yeah, create some by what you pay attention to, choosing what you pay attention to. And then number two, appreciate it, linger with it. There's a lovely poem by Mary Oliver called Lingering in Happiness. Yeah, and part of that is by actually, oh, what can we notice here that's actually quite good, it's quite okay. And that's not to say this is the goal of a life. Like never, you know, that bad stuff, you know, don't look at that, you know. But including more and lingering with them and seeing what happens, how they open, how they expand, how they deepen through the way that we pay attention to them. So I would kind of say that for a starter, and it's endless, but that would be a good way to practice it. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Then I have a nice thought.
Mm-hmm.
Or something like that.
Yeah.
Then, other than just noting, okay, nice thought, and then letting it go,
mm-hmm.
and maybe offer to do anything else in this moment, in the middle of the practice. I'm not saying about, you know, the daily life when I see nice, but to be more sensitive to nice things.
Mm-hmm.
Not taking things for granted.
Yeah.
Like
Great. Yeah. So the response is, okay, but what about, so I'm paying attention to in this case, breathing, the direct present experience of the breathing, and then a thought comes, and it feels like a nice thought. And so we could think of the practice, I'm still repeating the question, is to, you know, appreciate that's a nice thought, and then, you know, come back to the practice, or should I kind of stay with that and kind of absorbing in that? What I would say is working with thoughts is kind of an advanced practice, in a sense, we might say. It would be easier, if we're learning this practice, to do it with something that feels a little bit like they stick around for a little bit longer. Like, there may be nothing more Nietzsche than a thought, right? And so kind of like, oi, it's gone. So with a bodily sensation, it's like, oh, I'm mostly focusing on the painful sensations. Maybe there's a pleasant or a unnoticed sensation, and I can stay with that and then practice that appreciation, that gratitude, see it grow, see it kind of sustain in that way. So kind of like working with the slower things first is going to be more helpful. If there is the steadiness of attention and we notice thought coming up, going away, or there's a lot of thoughts, and underneath that thoughts or around that thoughts, there's like a mood, yeah? And if that mood really is something pleasant, then it probably already is something like generosity or love or appreciation, like we were saying, with the pleasant. Attend to that. That has an energy to it. It has a slightly more sustaining quality. If there's a steadiness of attention to stay with that, that can be really, really beautiful to do. And that's a pleasant Vedana that sticks around just long enough and is supported by appreciating the appreciation, you know, appreciating the generosity, appreciating the love, the metta, those kinds of things. But it does require a little bit more steadiness with the attention.
Yeah. I would also add something to clarify. In your example, it depends what practice you're doing. So if you're doing a breath, like a samatha samadhi practice with the breath or the sound, and the thought comes in, I wouldn't necessarily go to, oh, this is a pleasant Vedana. Yeah. If you're doing a Vedana practice, then you're noticing the Vedana of different things when that's the primary thing that you're doing. You know, and it's confusing because we might say, you know, you're sitting here, you're doing your metta practice or your breath practice or whatever, and something unpleasant comes, and then you can work with the Vedana to work with that unpleasantness, so it's not a distraction. So that's why it's kind of confusing. So then you could also do the same if the thought is like a distracting thought, using the Vedana to say, ah, pleasant, feel that pleasantness in the way Nathan was saying, and then you come back to your primary practice. Yeah, so this is kind of primarily what we're doing. But at other times we might say we're doing Vedana practice, which is actually looking at the Vedanas of experience. And then that would be a little bit different. Yes, yeah, having clarity about what the practice is. Yeah. 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 No, it's good to kind of like seeing of it in the question is really helpful. Yeah, to make that clarification. Yeah. Ooh. Okay. You choose. Or are we relying on my memory? I think. I don't know. Did Gal ask a question in the hall before? Galosh as the Pam Rishonan, Nachon? Okay, go.
My question was a bit level. So, explain the more technical, for example, feel free to stay technical and slow down. Yesterday I had a practice and it's through a whole body skill. So it's five, just wouldn't budge, just wouldn't leave me. About just said it's meaning being like this macro experience, it's meaning micro experience, it's meaning so many levels on the outside. So what I work with.
That's great.
My turn. Okay. Yeah, great question. And I think that there's a lot of this quality that we call discernment of chana. I need to repeat the question, sorry. So the question is around kind of having a visitation from a fly quite persistently during a meditation practice and working with it in different ways, but that kind of raising the question both for the practice but also in other situations in life around boundaries, and then the kind of the border between when I kind of skillfully make a boundary and when I basically open to things and allow them, and kind of the whole nuance that can be there, like passive aggressive or like I'll let you be here but actually I really want you to go or whatever, you know, is coming through. So it really brings up a sense of discernment, really important quality in practice of chana, and the insights that can come in. Yeah. So it's interesting with something like a fly, really bothers us, isn't actually harmful. Yeah, that's in itself, the actual thing of the fly, even if it goes into our mouth and or our nose, actually most likely not actually harmful, but very, very unpleasant. Yeah? So we bring in the discernment, and one way is we can say, okay, this is a practice ground. Yeah, it's not actually harmful, which is what you were doing, but it's a place where I can explore how I change my relationship, which is very habitual. Yeah, like sometimes the fly just lands and we already are reactive. Yeah, so I'm exploring, I'm building the skill set, yeah, how I attend to it. And sometimes, you know, we change the way of relating and the experience changes. Like if the fly had stayed on some parts of the body, it would be easier to just feel it actually, like, can be a pleasant sensation, actually, especially when we change. And then it gets, you know, more intense, more intense, more intense. So we build our capacity, just like with the metta practice, with these things. At some point, yeah, it can become like so much struggle in the experience that it's actually we're tensing up, and there may be a sense of, you know, lack of respect to ourselves or metta to ourselves or compassion to ourselves. It's a fine boundary to explore, and then we might do something which is not harmful to either, like putting something on over us, yeah, or, you know. In some places in the world, we start off meditating with a mosquito or a fly hat so that they don't get there to begin with. Yeah, so that can be a skillful response if the tension is building up. Now, just briefly, how does that relate to life experiences? We take that learning, having a skillful way of relating, yeah, and a metta or compassion way of relating to things, a befriending of experience. Really important to say that does not come instead of having skillful boundaries. Yeah, so we do sometimes need to have boundaries. Yeah, either because the behavior from the other person is harmful, and when we put up boundaries, we're actually also protecting the other person and other people that are not even right now directly in the situation, or other beings, not just people. It's important to remember that. So sometimes, you know, that can be a expression of compassion or of metta to actually have boundaries, yeah. Just to say that our exploration can also be how do we set boundaries without with doing that, like that image of putting the cloth over your head is a really good one. You know, I'm setting a boundary in a way that's not causing tension and causing harm as little as possible. Yeah, the more complex situations are, the more tricky that will be. Yeah, but there is a possibility there. And even if we end up doing something or saying something that will hurt the other people, the other person's feelings, you know, sometimes that's unavoidable. Yeah, we can still do it internally. Yeah, with as much compassion and metta as possible. So the inner posture, the inner poise is not one of enmity, of hatred, of animosity. Yeah, but it's coming from that discernment and that clarity of boundaries are helpful in the situation. Yeah? So that's the... I see you nodding, so I'm assuming that's helpful. Well, that's responded to your question. Yeah, great. Okay. Here we had 1, 2, and 3. Yes. Okay. Elecha. אז אולי נעצור פה ונחזור, ואז נעבור לשאלה השנייה, כי הם נפרדות, אז נראה לי, נכון? אז פשוט יעזור לנו שאני לא אצטרך להחזיק שתי שאלות בראש בו זמנית. I'll repeat the question in English and then I'll answer it in... אתה מעדיף תשובה בעברית? Okay, then either one of us can answer it. So the question is about a wish for clarity between samadhi and insight in particular. When I practice samadhi, I'm paying attention to a particular object, and then I also see the anicca of it, you know. So where's the distinction? And also with samadhi practice, how narrow a focus does it need to be? Am I supposed to say, if I'm practicing with the breath, to for all the other sense doors to close, not to hear sounds or anything else? Kind of how focused, how specific does it need to be? You want me to answer?
Oh, sorry. No, I'm happy to respond. So maybe it's helpful just to kind of say samadhi is not just one thing, right? So it could be done in any of those kind of ways that we could say. Here, the kind of samadhi that we're generally encouraging is sensitivity. Yeah, so really kind of allowing things to be more experienced and finding what actually supports us to do that. And for many of us, that's opening out the spaciousness so that we're not so kind of reactive and this, that, blah, blah, blah. You know, so it's like, oh, feeling, sensing, getting to know, and that can be like a pleasant way of being. And so we're cultivating a pleasant way of being. It can extend to very kind of extremely kind of absorbing qualities of paying attention to things. And what we tend to notice then is that, yeah, there isn't really a sense of other things than what I'm absorbed with my attention in. So, you know, if you're like reading a book on a bus, you know, you kind of forget about being on a bus. You're just reading this book and the stories are great and you're in that world. And then someone might have to call your name a few days, and then you come back, you know. So you can get really, anytime, bring attention to something, get devoted and interested in that, and get absorbed into that, and it goes deeper, and that can happen even with, you know, things that most human beings would say aren't that interesting, like the breath, you know, or like a body sensation, you know. So how could you sit there with a body sensation for as long as I'm sitting here with my fantastic magazine that's full of really interesting things? But we can, when you get sensitive, it starts to reveal itself, starts to be really fulfilling to pay attention that way. And so, you know, that's kind of what samadhi is. In that instance, you may or may not notice that things are anicca, right? You may or may not notice. But if you actually look at that experience with that insight lens, and you say, yeah, everything in there was anicca, it came and went. But it might not be helpful all the time for that samadhi to be supported by any one particular insight. Right. if you bring a particular insight into being, you will notice it cultivates a certain kind of samadhi. Yeah? So paying attention to things is anicca, it's this kind of letting go, it's, oh, there's nothing to hold on to, it's all just flowing, it's inconstant, it's unstable, whatever it is, the word that we're using. Yeah? It's like, oh, there's nothing to grab onto, and it's kind of like a loosening, a letting go, a delight in that way. So different insights support different samadhis. There are many, many kinds of samadhis, many, many kinds of insight, and they all have a place and a practicality. They have outcomes, inclinations, and they meet us in how we are. Yeah, that all affects how the experience is. So that's kind of like an overview, and I hope that kind of gives you a sense of the territory. And within that, you know, what we're supporting here, I think, is mainly the kind of the sensitivity, the spaciousness, the intimacy with experience, that kind of samadhi, and the sense of, ah, that's quite nice. So I'll keep doing that.
כן, אני, I'll just add in here, במה שככה, קודם כל כאן, בריטריט הזה, הסמאדי, המטה זה הדבר המרכזי, ולמי שמטה זה פחות זמין, אז תרגול סמאדי, אבל סמאדי במובן של הרמוניזציה, איסוף, איחוד, אז בשביל הדברים האלה, בדרך כלל משהו יותר רחב, יותר תומך מאשר פוקוס מאוד מאוד מצומצם. רק להגיד, אבל זה תלוי בתרגול האישי, אז זה גם משהו להביא לקבוצות או לפגישות אחד איתנו כדי לבדוק. ובאמת ככה, והסיבה לזה, כמו שנייתן אמר, וככה אמרתי, זה אנחנו, לפעמים אנחנו מדברים על תרגול מטה או סמאדי כמו קושנינג, כן? זה משהו שמרקח את החוויה בשביל שהתרגול תובנה יהיה מיטיב, כן? וגם יספג יותר עמוק. כן? אז זה המטרה שלו כאן. כן? והראייה שלך שהדברים הם לא לגמרי נפרדים, היא גם נכונה. כן? בתרגול סמאדי יש גם תובנה. ותרגול תובנה יש גם סמאדי, וזה גם נטיות אישיות, וגם הכוונה הספציפית של התרגול בזמן מסוים שמכוונת את החוט המסוים שאנחנו נחקור. נראה לי שזה גם ענה וגם בלבל. כן, אני רק אעשה, אני רק אעצור רגע ואגיד שעכשיו 11, אז אנחנו נשאר ונענה לשאלות שנשארו, השאלה השנייה שלך, והיו עוד שתי שאלות שראיתי. מי שרוצה או רוצה לצאת לתרגול בהליכה, מוזמנים ומוזמנות. ואנחנו נמשיך עם השאלה על הוודנה, בבקשה.
I'll say something. So did everyone manage to hear the question all right? Did it come across? Ladna? No, to repeat?
Repeat, yeah, also for the recording.
Yeah. Do you want it repeated in Hebrew or?
No.
Anything? Okay. So generally getting to understand that there's this thing which, you know, is there are Vedanas, there are sounds that appear, and they appear, you know, to be neither pleasant nor not pleasant. It's just, yeah, they're just sounds. And they feel like, yeah, I can kind of see how those sounds are that way. But in the body, it doesn't seem like that's so obvious, you know, that there's actually sensations which are neither pleasant nor not pleasant. So I would say, you know, it's a tricky area, right? In a way, we need to have this third Vedana, you know, for when experiences are not really pleasant, not really unpleasant, and we would say, well, I don't really know. That's kind of like how they are. But there's also this kind of definition from like, well, what's the outcome from that? Now, when something is neither pleasant nor not pleasant, we don't tend to notice it. So it's also an encouragement to notice what we're not really noticing. And I think that what we'll find in the body is that there are some parts of our body which have not called our attention in a very long time. Yeah, they're just not, they just don't have a lot of pleasantness or unpleasantness to them. But if we start paying attention to them, it changes. You know, and so this could be a sufficient kind of outcome from the teaching, which would be, oh, when I pay attention to something, it doesn't stay as neither pleasant nor not pleasant, not unpleasant. Yeah, it doesn't stay that way because it depends on the way I pay attention. In that case, there's one teacher called Stephen Batchelor who says there is no such thing as a neither pleasant nor not pleasant Vedana. And you could say that as soon as something comes into existence, it comes alive
to and attention. It has... Into attention.
Sorry, what did I say?
Existence.
Okay. As soon as something comes into existence, by being brought into attention and awareness, and it's there, existing for you, then it has some relational quality, you know, which brings you a sense of pleasance or oh, actually, that's unpleasant, yeah? So, you know, this kind of thing, it unfolds that way. Do they really exist or not exist? No. Because nothing really has a Vedana from its own side. Yeah, it's the heart mind that adds it on. So, and our mood really affects that. You know, there'll be some moods where all the, you know, so-called neither nor Vedana, they're all unpleasant. Yeah? And even like having senses, come on. Like, who wants that? Like, it's unpleasant. Another time, it's, it's great. I love it. I love that I can hear. I don't care that I'm hearing stuff that, you know, the horrible sounds of destruction or something. It's like, no, it's just that we can hear. Fantastic. I love it. So it really depends. It arises. It depends.
I warned you, don't do it.
Yeah.
And then you do it, and it's like, relief. And I'm wondering how you would understand the two ideas, and if the Vedana is so attached to it, and how can you release the attachment?
Yeah, really great question. So noticing, I'll repeat the question, then you can go. So,
okay.
So like, that, you know, we go into a shower, and we're going to have cold water coming onto us, and it feels like that's going to be really unpleasant, and then we do it anyway, despite the fear, despite the anxiety, despite the reluctance, and we're like, actually, that's nice. Yeah, that's a good practice to do, of not feeling being ruled by your Vedanas. And then there's this kind of question in general about, like, how do we work with fear, with Vedana, and all of that.
Yeah. It's Ken. זה באמת שאלה מעניינת, זה גם מעניין שאמרת את זה ככה, בגלל שנייתן, כאילו, כאילו הייתה לו תקופה שהוא עבד עם מקלחות קרות כדרך להתמודד עם פחד מוות. אז כאילו אתה אמרת, he said it exactly the same as you, it's gonna kill me. וזה מאוד מעניין לראות את ההסלמה הזאת, כן? התרגול ודנה, הוא מראה לנו את ההסלמה. כן? בעצם יש הסלמה מהדבר הזה שזה יהיה לא נעים, כאילו, וואו, כן, זה הולך, כאילו זה הולך להיות ממש מוות או זוועה. ומה שאתה עושה שם, כן, אתה עושה שם כמה דברים שאתה עושה את זה, כן? אחד, אתה מתרגל, אתה מתאמן, כן? בלהרגיש את הפחד, כן? שהוא אסקלציה של הוודנה, ולא לתת לו לשלוט, כן? כמו שנייתן אמר. דרך להשתמש בתרגול ודנה, אני רוצה לדייק כאן משהו שלפעמים ככה קורה כשאנחנו מלמדות את זה, שאנחנו קוראות לכל החוויה ודנה, בעצם ודנה זה הרובד המיידי, התיוגי הזה, שלא נעים. אז לפעמים להגיד פשוט, לא נעים זה רק לא נעים, כן? מאוד מאוד עוזר, גם עם פחדים, כן? לא נעים זה רק לא נעים. כן? ושוב, כמו עם הזבוב, כן? זה עניין של הקונטקסט והסיטואציה, כן, מתי אני אגיד את זה, כן, אני לא אשים יד בתוך אש ואגיד לעצמי, לא נעים זה רק לא נעים, כן, אלא אם, כאילו יש סיבה ממש ממש טובה של להציל חיים של מישהו כדי לעשות את זה, אבל כן, אז הקונטקסט הוא חשוב, כן? זה דרך לעבוד, אבל לראות שאם אנחנו ניקח משהו כמו פחד, אפשר, וזה עוד דבר שתרגול ודנה יכולה לעשות, לקלף אחורה את השכבות של ההסלמה ולהגיע לרובד הזה. כן? וזה אותו דבר עם ודנה נעימה, כן? אני מרגישה שאם לא יהיה לי את הדבר הזה, אז החיים שלי לא שווים, כן? גם הפוך על פחד מוות. יכולה לקלף חזרה את השכבות ולבוא למקום שאומר, אוקיי, זה נעים, והנעים הזה גורם לרצון ולהיחזות ולהסלמה ולסיפור. כן? אבל בסופו של דבר, זה לא תלוי בכמה אני ארצה את זה, כן? והרצון הזה מביא קיבוץ ודוקה, אז האם אני יכולה להישאר עם הנעים, ליהנות ממנו, להעריך אותו, להישאר גם עם אולי הכמיהה, כן? לא בהכרח רעה, אבל בלי ההבנייה של ההאחזות, או של הדחייה שפחד הוא מקרה קיצוני שלה. זה עונה לך? ככה, ככה? If we're very attached, how can we try and release? Yeah, it's like sometimes I kept doing this. It's like peeling back the process to the level of the Vedana. Yeah, of just staying, and sometimes it's a lot of repetition. It's just like coming back to the breath. And sometimes, I don't know if you ever do this, but sometimes, you know, with the breath, I just say to myself, stay, stay, you know, stay. So with the attachment to something pleasant, it's just going back to that, it's pleasant. Relax. It's pleasant. Relax. Yeah. What we're interested in is we use the Vedana to kind of stay at that level before the building up and the escalation from pleasant to I like it, to I need it, to I have to have it, to, you know, without this, yeah, nothing is worthwhile. Yeah. So that's kind of, so we just peel it back to the pleasantness. And as we do that, really kind of relaxing, feeling the relaxing of the contraction, and we can support it with relaxing the contraction of the body and opening the body.
Yeah. I would just add one more thing in relationship to that, right? You know, the part of the enjoyment of the cold water hitting you isn't just the fact that actually cold water is nice, especially when it's so hot, but it's actually that I met a limit, a boundary, a self-definition. Like, you can't handle this. You're like, I can. And it sprays on you. In that moment, you are not the self that you declared yourself to be. And that is really liberating. Right? We love to meet a challenge and just say, okay, I'll do it. Because I'm the kind of person who wouldn't... So it's a challenge for me. So it's just stepping through that boundary. And it's a skillful use of stepping through that boundary. And there's a delight in that. And I think understanding that we delight in not fulfilling our self-limitations, I think that that's a really important thing. Yeah. And so when we meet a fear, meet a challenge, and like, say, yeah, I'm going to do a bit of this. Yeah, I'm not going to break it, I'm not going to whatever. I'm just going to, I can have a cold shower, I can embarrass myself, you know, yeah, or whatever it is. You know. Okay, let's give it a go. Not be who I think I am.
Yeah, so there's the release of the sense of the image of the self and the self-identity, but also of the clinging and the craving, yeah, which is also in the pushing away, right? Clinging and craving have this sense of like trying to hold on to something, but they include the pushing away, yeah? So that release, all of that crumbles together, and that feels good. So remembering that feeling is also really important, really helpful.
Yes. I think we have to go here first.
Yes, we do, and then... There's a couple of questions there. Yes. Ken. We have to be shorter.
Wandering around.
I can do it, be short.
You can be short?
Yeah.
Okay. Because it's already quarter past, I don't know if you're seeing the time.
So it's quarter past, so we're going to be really, really short. And, you know, some of these questions, as you say, there are some questions which they can wait for later, you know, and if they can, then we'll allow them to. This is a question related to the difference between an attachment for something and a longing or a wholesome wish that something would come true. How do we know the difference? We'll know it in the contraction. Yeah. Am I contracted around this, or actually is this opening my heart when I feel into this wish for the well-being of all beings, right? It's a meta wish, and it's expansive, and it moves in a different direction. So we use this attachment, this word. The best kind of feeling for it is that I have gripped onto this, and it has to be this specific way, you know, and if I don't get it, everything is rubbish. You know, that is all that kind of qualities of attachment. Whereas, like, I really wish for this to happen. I know it's complex. I know it's beyond my control, but I'm going to guide my life towards what feels most meaningful.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even if we're feeling it opens up the range, right? So we also, one of the things we'll do is we'll take things like sadness or pain at the suffering in the world, and they will immediately, without being conscious of it, go into it as if they're negative or wrong. Yeah, but there can be, you know, a sense of sadness at the unnecessary suffering in the world. It's not a negative emotion, and I would say it's not dukkha. It is dukkha when there's a contraction, yeah, and we said we'd be short, so just what Nathan said, yeah, that distinction, really, really helpful to see. And just to also clarify the language, you know, we use, like, echzut is, like, attachment, craving, is they are the same thing, like, they're translated differently sometimes, yeah. Yes, and that helps to open, because as you're saying, sometimes, most of the time, things will come mixed together. Yeah, so there may be some attachment or some craving or some grasping in the situation, but it's not the entirety of it. And we can let go of that and still stay in contact with our longing and with our sadness at the pain and the suffering in the world. Yeah. Okay, we had two more questions. Yes.
It's a yes, no question.
So yes and no, I think he's saying.
So we have the answer. I have this way of doing meditation, which is helpful for me as someone with ADD.
Yeah.
And I wanted to know if it's helpful, productive to Nisha, the practice, or is it even Vipassana, which is, I work with a very soft focus. I start with the breath, but I'm very open to anything that comes up. Sounds especially, but bodily sensations, and even the mental state. And when pain arrives, I usually sample it. I focus on it for a second. It's a soft focus. I move on to the next interrupt. And I come back. See how it changes.
Yeah.
So, as I promised, the yes no question.
Yes.
Yeah. So the answer is yes. So experiencing ADD and finding your own kind of way with this more soft, diffused attention, which just really allows things to kind of be moving through and passing through. When something unpleasant comes, just like a little taste and moving on, so I can come back, and then like familiarizing ourselves, and then maybe we open to more of it. And then, you know, that whole pacing, that keeping it soft, keeping it gentle, is very much in line with the teaching.
Michai, you had something? No? Okay. Feel free to ask us. Okay. אז תודה לכולם וכולן, יש לנו 11 דקות עד